Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Today we'll be talking about the college experience and preparing for graduate school from the perspective of a visually impaired student.
We first met Rebecca Alford as a high school junior many years ago, and now she's just graduated from college and has been admitted to a graduate program to pursue a PhD, and we will be speaking with her about this level of her education. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Rebecca.
The advice I would give somebody is don't have a certain definition of what success means in college. Just kind of do what excites you, and it will come. I think if I were to be more honest, I think it's because I do the things that I'm excited about. And if you're excited about something, you do it really well. I think that's what has helped me to get here.
That could be one of the best motivators.
Yeah.
And I think the advice that she gives about doing what you love and you'll end up doing it well applies not only to education, but to every facet of life.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
Mystic Access, providing assistive technology audio tutorials and trainings designed to empower and motivate. Products are created by the blind for the blind. More information available at mysticaccess.com, where the magic is in learning. Let's start by reintroducing Rebecca.
So Rebecca, we've talked to you several times before on Eyes on Success a few years ago, following your career from high school and then going into college, and now you're about to go on to graduate school. Can you just refresh our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you're doing in life these days?
Sure. My name is Rebecca. I'm 22 years old. I started doing science when I was in high school, when I was about 14, and now I'm about to graduate Carnegie Mellon with a bachelor's in chemistry, and I'll be starting my PhD at Johns Hopkins in chemical engineering in the fall. I've been working in Jeff Gray's lab at Johns Hopkins, doing a certain type of computation that allows us to look at how biological molecules work, specifically membrane proteins. These are really important in like signaling and stuff. And yeah, I'm really excited to head to Hopkins and keep working on stuff I'm excited about.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments, and I understand that yours is closely related to your field of research. Can you describe that a little bit?
My very first project was looking at a protein where mutations were potentially linked to the impairment that I had. And the main objective of the research was to figure out if we could model the structure of that protein when it had the mutation in it, if we could understand sort of on a molecular basis what's going wrong. But since then, I've sort of shifted my research focus to building more general tools.
Your particular visual impairment is an uncommon genetic problem, right? Can you describe what that is?
Yeah, so I have congenital stationary night blindness. That's the primary genetic component. I basically can't see at all in the dark or in low lighting. I have a really difficult time adapting to changes in lighting. And I also have difficulty seeing like any details, things that are like low contrasting. And I also have strabismus, so I'm not able to focus well.
And you use a cane to navigate around campus and large print magnification on your computers, is that right?
I use my cane sometimes. I have relatively good vision during the day, so I think I've gotten comfortable enough with campus that I don't really need it. But definitely at night I use it. I use large print today. That's a lot of like somebody emailing me something on the computer, and I'm using like basically the Mac version of the magnifier to enlarge it myself.
Now, when we first met you, you were in high school and, as you said, doing research in the labs in high school, and you went on to win prizes in the Intel science competition. But you've went on to much bigger things in your profession and your career recently. Can you tell us about some of the awards you've recently won?
So earlier in April, I won a National Science Foundation Fellowship These are 3-year awards that are given to graduate students, and it provides 3 years of funding and tuition support for your graduate school. Just to explain, because not a lot of people might know, but when you do a PhD in the sciences, your tuition is paid and you get paid a stipend. But when you have a fellowship, it's really nice because that means that like all of that is taken care of by another organization rather than the university. So the NSF is really cool. And then I also received a Hertz Foundation fellowship. And this fellowship is given to 12 students in the U.S. every year in physical science, engineering, or biology. And that actually provides 5 years of fellowship and tuition support, which is really exciting. And the reason that, you know, I guess I got a lot of questions, well, oh, doesn't your graduate program pay for you? I mean, first, they're really prestigious, but also when you have your own funding, you get a lot of freedom to do the projects that you want without having to worry about like where grant money is coming from. It's cool kind of startup money to do science and think freely without worrying whether it aligns with the grant.
And that really makes you an attractive candidate to nearly any institution in the country if you come along with your own funding. And
yeah, because you're free of them.
Right. That's okay.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is reflecting on what college has been like for a visually impaired student and exploring what some of the decision criteria are for selecting a graduate school.
So we'll be talking about applying to graduate school and what preparations you're making for graduate school in a bit. But people may remember from talking to you years ago, when you were applying for undergraduate schools as a visually impaired person, you took some things into consideration that other people might not necessarily have taken into consideration, such as the geography of the campus, how you were going to get around, what accommodations could be made for you. So maybe you can give us an idea of how some of that worked out and what kind of issues you did run into as an undergraduate.
Sure. Certainly as an undergraduate, I think I chose right in terms of picking a city. I don't really feel left out that I don't drive because most people here don't have cars. They just use the bus system. I go to school in Pittsburgh, so it's really nice, like mobile city. Also, you know, going to a place that's walkable is nice in the wintertime if you go to a place that has winters because, you know, everyone has the same concerns about getting to school in the snow. People don't really have a one-up in terms of having a car or not, because not being able to drive is definitely an important consideration. Also, just for like grocery shopping and thinking about how you're going to meet your friends when you go out, I think living in a nice mobile city was a big thumbs up.
Did you have any surprises about things you may or may not have taken into consideration when selecting a college?
I think the most interesting thing that I didn't anticipate was that I think for me, the best solution was always to not use the disability resources and to kind of rely on my undergraduate advisor and my professors and communicating with them for accommodations. And the reason for that is when you get to college, all of your stuff is really specialized. So being a chemistry major, we had a lot of like chemical structures that we had to figure out how to enlarge. And the disability office wouldn't really have the expertise to proofread those diagrams and large print materials. I think it's really better if I sit down and take the time to talk to everybody and make sure we understand the situation and all the things we need to do to make the semester run smoothly. Like, it's not just as simple, like, I need extra time on a test. There's a lot involved, and it's a huge teamwork and communication effort.
So now that you're just graduating, were you happy with how cooperative and how much of a partnership the faculty was willing to make with you in this regard?
Yes and no. I think there are some places that it went extremely well and faculty were really willing to help and willing to do the work to help me succeed. I mean, everybody, you know, nobody's perfect. You know, people forget that that's happened my whole life, not just in college. I think some things that disappointed me were like kind of the stereotypes that people had associated with having accommodations. And I think that like sometimes there were some like insensitive behaviors that just shouldn't have happened towards like if you have an accommodation, a certain assumption about how well you're gonna do, or like maybe that you wouldn't need that accommodation if you were smarter or something. And again, it's not hugely widespread. It's a couple of instances, but I think I've definitely thought about like, you know, for me, I basically had to like do a lot of the work, you know, to make sure I got accommodated. I didn't really lean on the disability office because I realized I knew I was the best person to do that. And I wish the system were like a little bit more forgiving to people who have kind of a little bit more special complex situations like me.
Juan, we've talked about that several times with you in the past. I mean, you're a pretty proactive person taking charge of what accommodations you need and what you need to succeed. And you've always talked about, you know, how you can be your best advocate.
Right.
And that's a very important skill to have.
Right. And I mean, this has nothing to do with like, you know, the institution. Like, I mean, it's stuff you encounter every day. You know, I think getting accommodated in the classroom is always going to be a team effort. Like, you can't do it by yourself because you need your professors and your advisors to be on board. I think looking back, if I were to change one thing, I think it would have been great if like that team mentality would have been in place. Like, I didn't have to do so much work to create it for myself, because I think that puts a lot of extra work on the student that they don't need. And think about it, like going from high school to university. In high school, you have like a vision teacher who takes care of all of that for you, but now you have to take care of it yourself. Like, I think that disability resources should provide a little bit of that support, because, you know, you're only human and you're trying to succeed just like everybody else.
Well, and a lot of young people just haven't developed those skills, because as you say, people have been advocating for them and taking care of them a lot in the past.
Sure.
Just to be clear, a lot of people might interpret what you just said as an explanation of why you don't think you did as well as you could have. But obviously you did extremely well in college because you got into a top graduate school and you got two of the best possible fellowships.
Yeah, right.
So you also talked about some of the social issues in terms of roommate issues and how to keep the room and arrange the room. Can you talk a little bit about some of those issues you ran into that were kind of a surprise?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like my personality or maybe my personality and my preferences are intimately tied with my roommate experiences. But I think I tend to be really neat and organized, and I try to keep everything in certain places, and I don't like when things get moved, and I don't like disorder because it's harder for me to like navigate, especially like if you get up in the middle of the night, you can't see, or you know, something like that. So I think it's certainly you need a little bit more tolerance, because you know, I feel really guilty being like, oh well, you need to do this because I can't see. You feel like you're throwing out the ultimate excuse.
Oh, Pete tells me that all the time.
Yeah, it's like not a fun thing to say, but it's like true. Like, you know, it's not like you want them to feel bad for you. It's just kind of how things are. So I think, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to after I graduate, I'm getting my own apartment. And it's not because I don't like living with people. I think I have a certain set of things I like, and it's safer and it's a little bit more comfortable for me.
So in addition to some of the special needs you had in terms of equations and mathematics and formulas, you also had to work through some of the chemistry labs. How did that work out?
It depended on the lab. So at my university, we have four labs that we need to complete. The first lab, I had like a partial assistant. Like, I tried doing as much as I could, and then that person would kind of help watch and step in when I needed help. The second two labs were organic labs. I think I learned by doing that it was better for me to have somebody do the lab and me give them instructions, just because when you're working with organic solvents, some of the stuff is hazardous. You don't want it to spill. You're working with heat sources. I think that was a safety decision that needed to just kind of happen. And then now I'm in a physical chemistry lab and we're working in a team. So my team members are just helping out with the experimental part, and I do a lot of the calculations.
So now when you refer to a lab, you don't mean an afternoon. You mean an entire semester of an entire course that's basically based on the laboratory experience and doing the experiments and writing it up and all that.
Right, right.
And I guess with these labs, much as you like to do as much as you can on your own, at some point you just have to be a pragmatist and let people help where help is really needed. And you have to accommodate to that.
Yeah, and I think it depends on what your goals are. I mean, I know like Hobie Welder, who's a PhD scientist at one of the University of California schools, like he does wet lab experiments and he has an assistant and it works great for him. Like for me, I want to do computation. So I think the reason I took the classes were because I wanted to understand the experiments, but picking up the actual skill of like doing the wet lab experiment was not as important to me. So I think you have to kind of, and that's what I did with my advisors. You decide what your goals are and then you make a plan based on that.
And that was sort of my accommodation as a physicist. I always wanted to be an experimentalist, as you know. So what I wound up doing was mostly doing computer work, but I was always in the lab with the people who were actually doing the experiments. And, you know,
right.
That's how I found my accommodation to the situation. You also wrestled with the idea of whether or not to get a guide dog to help you get through undergraduate school and your many travels when you're going to these research labs across the country. Can you talk a little bit about how that conversation in your head went?
Yeah, it's kind of difficult because I think I had a really abnormally active undergraduate experience. I travel multiple times per semester to conferences and to visit the lab and things like that. So I think like a guide dog would have been a blessing and a curse because I think it would have been nice in the situations that it was like more difficult to navigate. But it also, you know, bringing a dog with you everywhere is a lot of work. And I think socially it's hard because you kind of have that label all the time. So for me, I kind of wrestled with it and never got around to it. And I know a lot of people like that who kind of, you know, they think about it and they say, oh, this would probably be helpful for all these reasons, but there are also consequences to it. Not that a guide dog is not helpful. I think just like career-wise, it's something you kind of have to figure out where it fits in. You know, of course the guide dog could go everywhere, but do you really want it in a lab where there's like chemicals and stuff around? Like, is that good for the dog? You know, things like that.
I guess like anything else, there's pros and cons.
Yeah.
And you just have to think logically and objectively about what's best in your situation.
Right.
So I gather you've decided against getting a guide dog when you go over to living totally on your own in Baltimore.
I don't think it's that I've decided totally against it. I think I'm just still waiting for more pros.
So let's talk a little bit more about graduate school. Mm-hmm. There was a big preparation in terms of deciding what schools to apply to, applying for these fellowships, which was quite a task, filling all that out. What other considerations went into graduate school, particularly, you know, being visually impaired?
Graduate school is very different because you apply based on like specific work that you want to do. It just so happened that the schools that I was looking in were in compatible places for me. Like I didn't look at Princeton because Princeton wouldn't have been a good place for me to live. Just because it's not a city. There's not as much transportation there. What other considerations? I don't think there was as much because I think as long as it was a city, it was fine. I think it was more interesting when I got to like the interview stage, remembering to ask that I needed accommodations at the interview. Like if they handed me a brochure, or like a schedule in the regular print that I wouldn't be able to read it. I think that was a first for me, like kind of having to identify, you know, accommodations that I need before I even got in. You write about your story in your application, but it's kind of different in person to be like, oh, well, I kind of need all these accommodations when I come to the interview. That was a first time for me.
Did people look past that, considering your technical accomplishments over the years? Or was that still somewhat of a hurdle to get over, talking about your visual impairment?
People were very willing to accommodate me. I think it was more me being comfortable with it than them being comfortable with it. They wanted me to, like, every time the impression I got was that they wanted me to be comfortable and they wanted me to succeed there. And they were going to do the things that, and they were small things, but they were going to do the things they needed to do to help me with that. I think it was more me than them.
Probably by that point, you know you've been able to do these things as an undergraduate and overcome whatever hurdles needed to be overcome. And by the time you're applying to graduate school, you're probably mostly thinking about technically what's best for your career and your technical interests.
Right. And, you know, you kind of have to think. I mean, certainly I think I'll joke sometimes that, like, I'll get things because I fit into a diversity category, which is really bad. And people shouldn't say that because it's not, I don't think it's true. But if you were to read my personal statement, like, I say that I'm motivated by my visual impairment, but if you were to take that very first sentence out and read the rest of the application, certainly that provides an anchor to the story, but it shows that I have a personality and that I have motivation, but the rest of it is a lot of technical work. At that level, the people who they're bringing in to interview have the skills to be there. Nobody's giving them any favors. They're paying a lot for you to come out there and interview or visit. So,
are there any special preparations that you're making before you actually start attending graduate school in the fall in terms of talking with your professors or textbooks?
I've been doing this for so many years. It's pretty routine for me. Like, it's not like anything out of the ordinary. I happen to know the accommodations person at Hopkins because I'd been there before, and they're fantastic there. So I just kind of said, here's the information. And they're like, cool, like, we'll take care of it. So I don't think there's anything special in terms of being visually impaired. I think it's just normal, like getting ready for grad school, like apartments and, you know, getting an apartment and furniture and all that.
That's enough of a hassle.
These days, are enough of the textbooks available in electronic format that you can just enlarge them on your screen, or do you need to get special textbooks too?
Honestly, like, a lot of my professors don't use textbooks, or they use their own thing. Like, I've had very few classes this year that use textbooks. Like, a lot of the intro classes do, but at my school, we don't really use textbooks. And I'm pretty sure it'll be the same at Hopkins, especially for, like, advanced courses that might not have a good textbook that meets the curriculum they want to teach.
So are the professors pretty accommodating about giving you copies of their notes so you don't have to look at the blackboard?
Yeah, I mean, we do a couple of things. I like to take my own notes if I can, because, you know, you kind of learn better when you do it yourself. So we've made some accommodations, like using whiteboards, or they'll write on doc cameras, like with black pen and white paper, so it's projected. So I can try to take as many notes as I can, and then they also post a copy of their notes online. Yeah, they've been really good. I mean, certainly, you know, nobody's ever resisted and saying, no, I'm not going to do this. The reality is, and you never want to say this, but they have to do it because they have to accommodate you. But all of them want to and have been pretty good about it. You know, sometimes people forget because they're busy, but you have to be okay with that. Like, you can't freak out every time somebody forgets. If they forget a lot, then that's a problem. But, like, people are human. You know, you have the nights that you stay up late doing stuff. Professors do that too, and they forget, so it's okay.
Right. Well, some of that is training, and they're just not used to what needs to be done.
So your undergraduate experience was particularly busy. You were taking all sorts of extra classes, most of them advanced. You were doing research out of state and flying back and forth to the research facility and going to conferences back and forth. But another big piece of the undergraduate experience is the social experience. Did you actually have time to have a life in between the rest of it? And how were the interactions with the other students?
Yeah, I mean, the problem of finding balance is, again, not specific to having a visual impairment. It's just a general thing that is a Carnegie Mellon thing. You get balance when you make time for it. So I think certainly there were times that I was really busy and it was difficult to find a balance. But I think as I got older, I definitely made more time for it because I realized the importance of, you know, getting time with my friends and also, you know, kind of making you better when you're doing the actual work. So, yeah, it's a work in progress. But I think it's a work in progress for everybody here. So I don't think I'm, like, unique in that.
So you're a person who's pretty well directed, knows where they're going, and makes plans for the future. Can you tell us a little bit about what your longer term goals are, say the next 5 years, next 10 years? Where do you envision yourself in the long run?
So my ultimate goal is to become a professor and have my own research group. I really like the idea that you can kind of direct and drive research, because I think at the end of the day, I'd really like to do research that helps us understand diseases. And then maybe we can develop better drugs and better treatments. That's really important to me personally and something I think is socially very powerful, because there are lots of diseases that are costly and impact your social life and your educational life, and they just make it a lot harder to be creative and accomplish cool things. And I also want to be in the position where I can teach other people to do research and follow their passions. So I think being an academic professor puts you in that position pretty well. So I'm obviously starting my PhD because in order to become a professor, you need to have one of those. But also I love doing the research. I cannot wait to be able to do research all day and not have other, you know, like running between classes all day. It's hard to do that. And then, yeah, I'm hoping that my research and getting some more teaching experience through TAing and also teaching some courses and running some courses will give me the training that will prepare me for that.
Now that you've just graduated, do you have any thoughts or advice that you'd like to share with other visually impaired people just starting college?
I guess what I'd say is I think everybody has a very different college experience as a visually impaired person. I think And one of the things you have to keep in mind, and you know, this may or may not be true depending on where you're from, but like you're most likely going to be the only visually impaired person there, depending on how big your school is. So I think it's, and I didn't go in with this enough, which is why maybe my first year was a little bit harder, but you have to go in with the idea that you're going to have to come up with your own solutions to things because you're doing something totally new. It's not very well defined. It's kind of part of being a scientist a little bit, even without, you know, being in the lab. You have to like come up with solutions to problems and think about how you're best going to succeed and just make sure that, you know, you advocate what you need because the likelihood is, you know, it's not that they don't want to help you. They just don't know how. So make it known and make it clear and you'll do really well.
Now for this week's final item, where you can find helpful resources for current and future college students. Well, the best place you can go, at least to get started, is to go to the American Foundation for the Blind's website, which is www.afb.org. If you search for college, you will find many, many resources there, a few of which are titled things like Preparation for College, Checklist, a College Planning Timeline, College Bound, a Guide for Students with Visual Impairments, but there are many others.
And in our show notes, you'll find links to a number of other resources, including a link to Rebecca's website, as well as a TED Talk that she gave. And we'll also have links to previous episodes of Eyes on Success, in which we talked about the educational experience through the eyes of visually impaired people. We'll also have links to some of the other interviews we've done with Rebecca over the years. So check out those show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1623. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about a programming camp for visually impaired youth. This is going to be yet another resource on educational topics for visually impaired students. We'll be speaking with Cheryl Cummings, the founder and executive director of Our Space, Our Place, about a camp that will be held in July of 2016 in the Boston area to teach middle school and high school students how to program computers. And that's a very valuable skill that can lead to a whole plethora of wonderful careers. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.